All right, you're very welcome along to week 14 of the NFL show here on OTB. We're going to hear from Kian and Wyatt. We'll hear from Sam in a minute as well. And, well, Sue's picks are not very hot at the moment, so she'll be making them at the end of the show. You know, last week she wasn't even here. I read the picks out. It was my mistake. I shouldn't have read them out. But we are going to talk about some of the big stories this week across the show. Obviously, Kareem Hunt is going to come up. Mark Sanchez is also going to come up. And I may as well get straight to it with Sam Monson of PFF. Sam, good afternoon to you. How are you doing? Good morning where you are.
Doing good. How about you, Jer?
I'm good, yeah. I've got my little Colin Kaepernick doll here, and the argument against Colin Kaepernick was, well, he's been out of the league for 2 years now, so he wouldn't be able to throw a ball or, you know, work his offense or do his thing at all in the NFL. And yet Mark Sanchez is trusted to come off the bench when Colt McCoy goes down injured. So, I mean, come on. This is the most nailed-on case of collusion we've ever seen.
There's a slight difference, though, between collusion and each individual team just not wanting to deal with this right now. So this week, the Redskins came out and they made the biggest basic mistake ever of actually answering the question. It was every time a quarterback situation ends up looking ridiculous, it's, well, have you thought about bringing in Colin Kaepernick? And the answer to that question is simply no. No, we haven't. Next question. Right. But the Redskins didn't say that. They said, we've thought about bringing in Colin Kaepernick. And then they gave three like ridiculous reasons why they aren't signing him. So he wouldn't be able to learn the offense in a week or two. And, you know, this is a problem. And Mark Sanchez has only been in the building a week or two. So, like, that's ridiculous. That is not a reason for signing Colin Kaepernick. The reason you're not going to sign Colin Kaepernick is because you do not want to deal with this media train wreck that's going to happen when you sign him. It's going to be not wall-to-wall Kaepernick, nothing else. And you don't want to deal with that. And that is fine, right? It's kind of a silly reason for not signing a guy. And when everybody takes that stance, obviously he ends up getting blackballed out of the league. But individually, that is not a terrible reason for not wanting to sign a guy. That happens all the time. There are guys with problems or guys whose kind of attitude, persona, media profile becomes too much of a headache and teams just don't want to deal with that. I don't think that specifically is collusion, but this idea, like, just present it for what it is. We do not want to deal with the Colin Kaepernick headache, and we are prepared to play a worse, inferior player rather than deal with it going forward.
That's the bit where I kind of get a little bit of uncertainty about how big a headache it would be to answer some questions in a press conference and to have your pre-organized media access be filled by a few more people. You answer a few more questions, your guys get asked about it, but you give yourself a chance to win. That's the thing that was always like, what's going to give us the best chance to win? We keep hearing about it. These are the most competitive people in world sport. They will kill your granny to win a game. The season is so short. Every single game matters to them in terms of contracts and records and all that stuff. But, like, really? A few questions too much?
Yeah, and it's a calculated thing, right? It's how much is too much. And everything, well, in the NFL in particular, but across all sports, really, the thing that people hate is this word distraction. You know, anything that's distracting you from the day-to-day of trying to win games is something they don't want to have to deal with. And sometimes it's a bad thing, sometimes it's a good thing. But whenever they have to answer questions about something that could potentially be a distraction, it just puts everybody off. So, you know, the Colin Kaepernick thing is a very layered, nuanced, kind of complicated thing because his statistics are kind of incredible. Even that last final season of his, he wasn't grading that well by the end, right? PFF's play-by-play grading, when you actually watch what he was doing and chart where all these passes were going, certainly that final season, he was nowhere near as good as his kind of touchdown to interception ratio would indicate in some of these box score statistics. So he's definitely better than, you know, all of the second and third string quarterbacks that are sitting on rosters right now. That I don't think has ever been a question. I don't think anybody has ever claimed that he is not good enough to be on an NFL roster right now. But he's not good enough to be worth the headache for a lot of teams. So you think back to a guy like Michael Vick, who, you know, ran a dog fighting racket, ended up in jail. He got a chance again because he was talented enough and good enough that it was worth the gamble for a team. They knew that they were going to have to deal with this media storm, this distraction, with Michael Vick being given a second chance, and they decided that it was worth the shot anyway. But we've also seen situations where that hasn't been true in the past. So you think of Ray Rice. It would have been an issue for a team to take Ray Rice after, you know, knocking a woman cold in an elevator on video, And everybody decided, no, it's not worth it. He's not that good. We're not going to run that risk. We're going to leave it through. And we'll see with Kareem Hunt now where teams fall on that. Kareem Hunt is a much more talented player than Ray Rice, much more in the prime of his career. And we're going to see now how long it takes for teams to go, okay, it's worth taking a shot again.
Yeah. I guess my question is really, how much of a distraction is it going to be for, like, I guess the distraction rolls on as long as Kaepernick kneels for the anthem, and that becomes a question week in, week out. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe people go, oh, he's doing his thing, and actually, we understand what he's doing, let's move on. Because
right. If you're, but also, he's suing the league, which is, well, that's a whole other layer to the element, to the,
You have to assume that goes away. If he signs for, say, the Jags for the last three games of the season, and they try him out and they give him a year and 3 week contract, so they're like, okay, we have somebody who we know is going to be decent. That's just an example. Whoever it was, and right. We're going to also pick up somebody in the draft because that's what we want to do. I just wonder, would the distraction disappear very quickly? Because let's face it, people get bored, stories move on.
Yeah, there is a chance it would, but then there's also, anytime these kind of things drag out, people latch onto it. You know, media, guys like you, Jer, guys like you, you're the problem here. You latch onto this stuff, you don't let it go, and then it just keeps spiraling. You know, the Cowboys were dealing with this Zeke Elliott saga last year for basically their entire season. It just, it may or may not, but I think the point is teams just don't want to take that gamble for a guy who isn't supremely talented and an obvious answer to any problem they have. You know, they know with this quarterback situation, you know, a team like Washington, they bring in Kaepernick, and it gives them a guy potentially to start the final few games of the season, and then they get rid of him, and they're back to square one. It's not a long-term problem they're solving, and they know that they're going to have to risk whatever this looks like short-term as the trade-off. And it may be a thing that disappears very quickly if they sign him on and they just say, here he is, let's talk about it for this week, and then no more, and we're done. And everybody gets bored, and they move on. But it's the kind of thing that could also just hang with them the rest of the season, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Elliott case is actually really interesting because what the Cowboys did in that instance was continue fighting, and try and get him off. And ultimately, that completely tanked their entire season, whereas actually, there's clearly a template to say, we screwed this up, he screwed up pretty badly, and he's going to come out and make amends, which is kind of part of the whole story that's missing from the Reuben Foster thing, and also clearly missing from the Kareem Hunt thing. One last piece in all this is that shuffling on stage in the last week or so has been Greg Hardy reminding everybody that, oh, actually, you know what, we've got a long history of this stuff in the NFL, yeah. Because he's making his UFC debut pretty soon. And you're like, talent level is the only thing that dictates whether or not you get another chance in the NFL.
Pretty much. Yeah, and again, he was the Cowboys brought him on after that situation. The UFC, by the way, are giving him his debut on a card with the lady that had to pull out of a fight because she got beaten by her husband so badly. That's a pretty spectacular level of obliviousness to what it is you're doing out there. But it's exactly what you're talking about. It's talent is the only thing that determines whether you're going to get back on the field or not. And if you're talented enough to be worth the headache for somebody, they're going to roll with it.
And Kareem Hunt is 23. He'll be 24 in the middle of next year. Say he gets a full year ban, maybe, which is unlikely, probably, given that no doubt his lawyers and the NFLPA's lawyers are going to be like, well, hang on a second now, what do you actually know from this? And this is the backstory to this. And all of a sudden it becomes like an 8-game suspension. And like at that point, almost every team in the NFL is looking at that going, what's the cost-benefit analysis here? Who's going to be pissed off about this? Well,
right.
He's fairly talented. Well, we can take the hit.
And that's exactly what goes on. We saw the Washington Redskins again coming out after they signed Reuben Foster and talking about Doug Williams basically came out and said that. He was articulating this thing as a cost-benefit, a risk analysis kind of deal. It's like we knew we were going to take a PR headache and we decided that he was good enough to be worth doing it. Now, he came out after that and said, yeah, okay, I apologize for my comments, that was wrong. But that's how the teams are dealing with this stuff. They're looking at this and they're saying, what is the downside from a PR standpoint of making this happen? And is it worth the talent that we could get by signing this guy? That's basically the only thing that's happening in any one of these discussions about signing players. It's got nothing to do with the morality of what they're doing.
It always seems a little bit kind of callous to be talking about the football impact of real life issues, like somebody like Kareem Hunt being violent towards a woman in late at night. And yet at the same time, this is an NFL show, so we kind of need to talk about what's going to happen next for Kansas City. They've come out really quickly. They've had their offensive coordinator do sit down half-hour-long conversation. I think Peter King had, was it Peter King or was it, it might have been Adam, what's his name, from ESPN, who actually had a half-hour sit-down with him where he was talking about the impact and what it's going to mean for the team. Like, they're getting out there and they're trying to shut down the notion that this is going to have some kind of contagion with the team's emotional well-being. And I've seen a lot of people go, oh, that's it, they're completely screwed. But, like, it's a running back who's very, very talented, but we've seen that running backs are, in many instances, in many different teams, if there's a system as strong as the one in Kansas City, quite replaceable. Spencer Ware is a high-level replacement. They've got a couple of other guys on that team who can step in. Does this really critically derail their Super Bowl ambitions?
No, not at all. It barely moves the needle, I think, in terms of this Chiefs offense. And I think Kareem Hunt is an extremely talented player, and even this season was playing very well, was breaking tackles left, right, and center, has one of the highest broken tackle rates in the league this year as well as last year. So he is a high, high level running back. But like you said, running backs are replaceable. The kind of the thing that determines running success more than the running back is the blocking in front of him, and the Chiefs have had that all season long. So if that maintains, if the passing game stays as sharp as it is, if Patrick Mahomes stays as good as he's been down the stretch, the running back is just a nice bonus. It's not something that's actually going to materially affect whether they're winning games or not. And I don't know that Kareem Hunt was that popular a player within that locker room that it's going to, you know, it's going to have this crushing morale effect on the team. I think they're fine to move on without him. And on the field, I think they're fine without him, even though he is an extremely good player that was making a lot of plays by himself.
Last week we were talking about the available situation in Cleveland and how, you know, there's actually really, it's not a bad job. All of a sudden there's talent on both sides of the ball, a bunch of number one picks and early first round picks who really perform to the level that they're picked at, doing well over a couple of seasons in a row. And that's a very alluring job. And then all of a sudden the Green Bay job offers you the chance to work with one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game. Is this as attractive a job as the Browns, or is there actually just a little asterisk beside the situation in Green Bay where maybe that roster is not as deep and as talented as people had assumed?
I think the roster is reasonably talented. The big thing about the Green Bay job is that Hall of Fame quarterback. It's Aaron Rodgers, because for years everybody has been saying, you know, Mike McCarthy's offense is the problem. It's holding back Aaron Rodgers. It's preventing him from showing his true greatness and being the best quarterback in the league every single season, because almost everybody kind of agrees that Rodgers is basically the most talented quarterback in the league every year. You know, for a number of seasons, Tom Brady has been the best, but even Tom Brady says that Aaron Rodgers is a way more talented player. And if you plugged him into this offense, you throw for 7,000 yards and all this kind of stuff. But I think people got locked into that narrative and didn't actually kind of check, you know, whether Mike McCarthy's offense did develop along the years. I think it's true to say that he was slow developing his offense the way the league was going. So, you know, adjusting to these run pass option plays, adjusting to the kind of route combinations and pick plays that were being built into every offense. And all NFL offenses have kind of gone the same way over the number of years, to just add these things in that make everything easier. You know, they open up receivers rather than expecting a guy to win one-on-one every single play. They're just all these wrinkles that every offense has developed. And I think it's true to say that McCarthy was slow developing those and adding those into his system. But they're there now. It's not like they still don't exist. You look at the tape this year, those things are in this system, and we still have the problem. So I think it's fair to start asking the question, to what extent is Aaron Rodgers a part of the problem in Green Bay? Now, it's not to say that he's not a great quarterback, because he's unquestionably phenomenal, but from a stylistic point of view, he does certain things that I don't think help him out, help himself out long term. He holds the ball longer than most quarterbacks in the league. He's always right up there at the top end of that spectrum, almost 3 seconds per play in terms of keeping the ball in his hands. Now, sometimes that results in him extending the play, creating these incredible downfield bombs that you see that make the highlight reels. But way too often, it means he's passing up an easy, short completion underneath over the middle of the field. And those are the plays, I think, that just make his life harder long term. He also, he's always been extremely good at protecting the ball, right? Doesn't throw interceptions, has the lowest interception rate in NFL history, one of the lowest turnover-worthy play rates in PFF history. But that comes at the expense of taking more sacks than anybody else and throwing the ball away more than anybody else. And again, sometimes you're just not putting the ball in a relatively risky situation, which over the course of time pays off far more, even if you are going to throw a few more interceptions that way. So I think what you end up with is this style of quarterback in Rodgers who makes incredible highlight reel plays, makes it look like it's all him in that offense because it's being put all on him basically by the way he's playing the game. So it looks like he's being sort of hung out to dry by the offensive system and by his coach and his play calling. But a lot of it is because he's just not taking the chances that other quarterbacks take and that you need to take in order to make your own life easier come the fourth quarter when it's all on you.
Did you hear the report? I'm trying to remember where exactly it was, but there was a former center who played at Green Bay who has now retired.
Jeff Saturday, right?
He was telling the story, yeah. He was telling the story that when he was a young player, he arrived and McCarthy would make the call. The call would come through in the headset and he would roll his eyes. The quarterback right. would roll his eyes at the head coach's play calls like a spoiled teenager. Now, I mean, okay, so maybe he was right. Maybe he does know more about football than Mike McCarthy. That might actually be true. But the bit where you're like, ugh, another shit call from McCarthy. It's like, what?
Right, and I think if nothing else, the next hire is going to tell us a lot about how this whole dynamic worked, right? Because there's not just the style of play that Aaron Rodgers has. There's always been these kind of questions about what kind of attitude he's got as well. And this dates way back right to the start of his NFL career. And whether it's with play calling Mike McCarthy and just, you know, rolling your eyes and shouting back at the sideline when you disagree with a call and all this kind of stuff, whoever comes in is probably going to give him as much freedom at the line of scrimmage as anybody. You know, we were hearing on the Sunday Night Football call that Ben Roethlisberger was calling like 80% of his own plays. Rodgers is probably going to get that kind of freedom with whoever comes in. And we're going to start to understand how much of this is Aaron Rodgers and how much of it is everything else around him. If he still looks the same, if he still holds the ball longer than anybody else, if he's still not taking, or he's still taking sacks rather than throwing some relatively risky passes over the middle, if the only 50-50 passes he's willing to throw are those sideline isolation routes to receivers, back shoulder throws where there's no chance of being intercepted, but he's not going to put the ball over the middle into a tight window because that anything can happen there. If he still looks the same, Aaron Rodgers is kind of the cap on his own legacy right now.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see who gets that job and what type of character they go for, whether or not it is somebody who's an old, wise head who can cajole that ego and talent and somehow mesh the two of them and find a way to release whatever power there is on the talent base. You mentioned Big Ben. The game at the weekend, last weekend, against the Chargers was one of those games where you kind of feel seasons can pivot on quite quickly at this stage of the year. Now, it's very early. James Conner goes down and we'll see what his replacement is like this week. But if that's his offense and that's all him, you know, 30 points scored is probably should be enough to win you most games, but it just feels like this Steelers team are short of something. I don't know what that is, but they're definitely short of something to be a proper contender in a championship game, in a Super Bowl game.
Yeah, I think a lot for the Steelers comes down to what happens to their defense in critical games against very good teams. The offense is usually pretty good and usually puts up 30 points and does enough to win most games. But when they run into the Patriots specifically, and apparently now the Chargers, their defense, which is always kind of better than it looks like it should be based on the talent level, their defense from an individual talent level standpoint is really not good. You know, you look across the board and there aren't that many players on that defense who will be starting for any other good defense. But they somehow consistently play over the course of the season better than you think they should. But that all unravels when you face these top quality teams. So, you know, last season they completely changed their entire defensive philosophy to go against the Patriots because they struggled so badly in the past getting picked apart. They just changed 100% what they do. They're usually a zone heavy team, and they went straight man-to-man coverage, and it almost worked, except they had Sean Davis one-on-one with Rob Gronkowski, and that was just a complete disaster. So other than the fact that there's one guy that couldn't make that function, it was a slightly better deal. But then this week against the Chargers, it's the same thing. They ran up and they had just no answer for this idea that Keenan Allen was going to play in the slot and just carve them up, whether they played man coverage, zone coverage. They just didn't account for him well enough, and that was this game. So for them, I think they need to figure out some way of getting more creative on defense when they play these better teams where they're going to expose the relative lack of talent they have on that side of the ball. For the Chargers, I think it was a really interesting game because for them, I think it was the start of this changing of the mindset thing, almost like the Irish rugby team, right, where they've been really good for a long time, but it's taken these sequence of steps of changing your mindset between, yeah, we can beat these teams, to, no, we're better than this team, we're going to beat them, and this is how we become contenders. The Chargers, for years, have been everybody's Super Bowl darling, and it's, oh, well, eventually the pressure's going to come on, they're going to crumble, and that's the end of the Chargers. But this, it was down in a hole on the road in Pittsburgh, went, no, to hell with it. We're going to come back, we're going to win this game, we're going to put ourselves in a good seeding position in the AFC, and we're for real this year. And I think they're going to get another one or two of those games over the course of the season. And it's, I think we're going to see how far along that road to sort of changing the mindset and being legitimate Super Bowl contenders the Chargers are.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a remarkable thing just in terms of how a flaky team becomes champions if they were to be able to see this through. And after the way Philadelphia came through last year, I'm actually not ruling out that possibility in the way that you might have done 5 or 6 weeks ago. It also would have been the most Chargers thing of all time if they'd missed the third kick and had it retaken and then missed it again with no right. penalty against the Steelers last week. So it's getting to that stage of the season where we have to take trends as facts. One last thing that I wanted to ask you about was the Texans and the Browns. So there was a sense that the Browns were kind of coming into their own. They'd shaken off the shackles of the Hugh Jackson era by pummeling the team that he was now on the sideline for the previous week against the Bengals. And then the Texans roll in and are in the midst of their longest, I think that was the win that got them their longest franchise streak in history. But there was just a sense that this is a grown team and this is a young team. And the grown team now are Houston. And that's unbelievable to come back from an 0-3 start to be 9-3 at this point, and now to look dangerous in all aspects of play.
Yeah, the Texans are a really interesting team because I'm still not convinced they're actually that good, but they're very good in the right areas. So quarterback, obviously, Deshaun Watson is playing, I think, better than he did a year ago, even if the statistics don't quite look it. He was the benefit of some kind of crazy, I don't want to say luck, but weird skewed statistics last season that made him look phenomenal. I don't think he was playing that well. This year he's playing better, even if the stats aren't as good. New Hopkins is arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL. That guy is just freaky. He's one of the few receivers out there. It just doesn't matter if he's open or not. He's going up over defensive backs, taking the ball away from them, just owning them whether he's covered or not. So those two have this incredible connection. On defense, you're starting to get cooking now with J.J. Watt coming back and looking again like the best kind of edge rusher in the NFL. They do a lot of creative things in the secondary, so even if their talent isn't that great there, they're able to confuse teams pretty well and do some look better in coverage because of that. We've been running some metrics at PFF that tries to kind of quantify, you know, the talent level and how well those guys are playing, and then reconcile that with sort of some statistics and some overall production point of view. And basically the difference between those two things is coaching, right? If you're playing at a dramatically higher level than the sum of your parts, in theory, that's a coaching thing. So right now, Romeo Crennel is one of our best graded coaches, if you like, using this kind of approach. So that on defense, they're kind of getting by some incredible talent up front and some really clever coaching on the back end. But their offensive line is still horrendous. If it wasn't for the Arizona Cardinals, the Texans would have the worst offensive line in the NFL. So I kind of keep waiting for the wheels to fall off this thing, but it hasn't yet. And then for the Browns, I think what you've just seen is that as much as they're moving in the right direction and as good as Baker Mayfield is, he's still a rookie quarterback. And rookie quarterbacks are always going to be susceptible to those games where they are confused by a guy that runs some creative coverages and where they do force the ball a little bit into places that they shouldn't, you know, do all the things that Aaron Rodgers refuses to do. And with Baker, it cost him a bunch of interceptions in this game and kind of just put them too far behind in the game to really make an entertaining contest out of it. I think if they'd been able to keep it close earlier on, we might have seen a much different game.
The final thing was that I saw your MVP, is it fair to call it a rant on Twitter, about Aaron Donald, because basically you were the hipster Aaron Donald, an analyst out there. He was like, this guy's definitely the best player, and now you can't all come along and say he's the best player because I've known about it for years. Is that a fair characterization?
It's just like everybody looked at the stats one day, saw that Aaron Donald has 16 and a half sacks by the NFL's official count, was like, oh, wow, Aaron Donald is the shit. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, this isn't new. He's been amazing for the past 3 or 4 years. And look, probably since J.J. Watt got his first major injury, Aaron Donald has been the best player in the NFL. But as long as value is a part of the MVP discussion, right? And if you want to say that it's not, and that MVP is just an analog for most outstanding player, which apparently was how it was kind of created initially, right? It's just the term they gave to the most outstanding player. If you want to use it in that way, I'm fine with that. And Aaron Donald is your MVP. But as long as we get bogged down every single year with quantifying value and, well, is it more valuable what he's doing to his team than what Mahomes is doing, blah, blah. As long as you start talking about value, Donald cannot be MVP because the top 15 most valuable players in the NFL are all quarterbacks. That's just the way the game is now. If you want to say value is not a part of it, and by the way, it definitely is, because the past 5 MVPs in the NFL have all been quarterbacks. A non-quarterback or running back hasn't won MVP since 1986.
Yeah.
So we're talking 30-odd years of quarterback or running back being the MVP. So whether it's supposed to be that way or not, it's definitely voted on as if value is a part of it. And until it isn't, a guy like Donald can't be MVP. He can only be the best player in the league.
There was a move a couple of years ago to make J.J. Watt the guy, and I think he finished second or third, and that was like, oh, this is a major breakthrough. They're finally recognizing defense as important. But, look, there's now talk that Philip Rivers, because of the way the team are performing, is going to be part of that conversation. Like, it's actually getting a little bit interesting. And if Kansas City were to lose a couple of games at this point, then there's probably a proper open competition for the first time in a while.
It would take that, though, I think. I think Mahomes has been pretty clearly the most valuable player when you look at what he's doing. Again, from a kind of expected points added situation, how much value he's adding to the team. He is doing crazy things. Even if you divorce the sort of the touchdowns and you try and take away the box score stats, if you just look at what he's doing from a down-to-down basis, he is working miracles with that team. Now, he has cooled off a little bit as the season's progressed. You know, even just last week, they could have had almost as many touchdowns as he wanted against the Oakland Raiders, because every time they put Tyreek Hill on the slot, the Raiders have such a rigid defense with, you know, strict rules that he was one-on-one with Nick Nelson in off coverage, a rookie, relatively slow cornerback. And every time he ran deep, he was 5 yards open. So they literally could have had as many touchdowns as they wanted if they were able to connect on that play, until the Raiders decided to change something on defense, which didn't look like it was happening anytime soon. So I think Mahomes is a pretty clear MVP, and then it would take some kind of collapse or something absurd to happen with Drew Brees or with Philip Rivers over the remainder of the season to kind of change that.
Sam, great stuff as ever. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Sam Monson there from PFF, and of course the Star of Sky at the weekends as well. Going to run you through last week's scores and next week's fixtures before we get Cian Fahey on the line, and then we'll get Sue's picks for you in a couple of minutes' time. Some pretty interesting fixtures coming up this weekend, and some were they crazy scores in retrospect? The difficulty with the NFL is that you look at the scores after the event and you go, oh yeah, I mean, obviously that was going to happen. Obviously Cam was going to throw 4 interceptions in a game that everybody knew they had to win. So I don't know if everybody was still on the Carolina bandwagon or if people were coming off it. So we can stick the scores up first. We get to them now. Yeah, so here we go. The Cowboys beat the Saints in Thursday Night Football last week with a stunning performance. We might get some analysis on that from Cian in a minute. The Ravens, with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback, hammered the Falcons, really, 26-16. The Buccaneers, wow, from nowhere, it looks like Jameis Winston's going to get a new contract, 24-17. The Giants in overtime with a win against the Bears, and hopefully that's the end of the non-Mitchell Trubisky a couple of weeks from the Bears' perspective. The Dolphins sticking around, still there, still in with a chance of making the playoffs. 21-17 victors over the Bills, who appear to have one of the best running quarterbacks that we've ever seen. The Jags 6, the Colts 0. A 6-0 win for the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game for the ages. The Texans beat the Browns 29-13. The Broncos went to Cincinnati and beat the Bengals 24-10. And they now too are beginning to roll and have some sense that they might be able to make it to the playoffs. The Rams beat the Lions 30-16. Cardinals beat the Packers 20-17, which ultimately cost Mike McCarthy his job because the Cardinals are not good. The Chiefs and the Raiders 40-33, which was a bit close and maybe with some hope for the Raiders. The Titans beat the Jets 26-22 with a very late Corey Davis touchdown in that one to keep them hanging about there as well. It's a good chance they've got a really easy fixture list over the next couple of weeks, so there's a good chance they too might be able to somehow squeak into the playoffs, although you would doubt it given how crap they were against the Jets. The 49ers not even pretending to care in the first half against the Seahawks, wiped out 43-16. They have the Broncos in town this week, and it was the Patriots 24, Vikings 10 in the late game. Sorry, the Chargers obviously beat the Steelers. And then on Monday Night Football, the Eagles beat the Redskins 28-13. Running through the fixtures really quickly before we get to Key in here. So Jags at Titans is Thursday night, Jets at Bills, Giants at Redskins. Redskins obviously probably out of it now, given that they have Mark Sanchez at quarterback. Saints at Bucks, Patriots at the Dolphins, always an interesting game. The Ravens at the Chiefs, should be a decent game, first time in a while. We've seen the Chiefs up against a really, really good defence. Are they actually that good? Colts at the Texans, again, an opportunity for us to just see if this Texans team are the real deal. It is the Falcons at the Green Bay Packers. No doubt Aaron Rodgers has one of the games of his life and sticks up 500 yards and two fingers to Mike McCarthy. Panthers at Browns, Bronx at the 49ers, Broncos at the 49ers, Bengals at the Chargers, the Lions are playing the Cardinals. That's the first 425 game. The Steelers at the Raiders, the Eagles at the Cowboys. Again, that looks like it could be a divisional decider probably at this point. And the Rams at the Bears before Monday Night Football is the Vikings at the Seahawks. So some pretty interesting fixtures towards the end of the day there. Kian Fahey is with us. Kian, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. One of the things that we didn't talk about there was the Patriots and how they just started to roll again. And it's like almost imperceptible that they're at a stage where they're going to have a bye, probably, if they keep rolling the way they are at the moment. And everybody's like, oh, no, they're just, that's not going to happen. They're not going to be as good as they were ever again. There's no way they're getting to another Super Bowl. I don't know. I think they're just going to get better and better and better as the season goes on.
I think of the teams projected to make the playoffs, they're probably the worst based on just this year in the AFC side, which is a strong thing to say, but it's not necessary. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be the worst in the playoffs because you've got Belichick there, who is a little bit of a great equalizer.
Can I just say, are they not the worst compared to themselves? But actually, when you compare them to the other teams and like how they match up against the other teams, they're totally fine. If we didn't know that they were the Patriots, for example, if this was another team who like were wearing different color jerseys and different logos, we'd be like, oh, that team's actually really good. Look at all the things they have.
I don't think so. I think they're just not that good compared to these teams even. I think the only team there that's kind of similar to them is the Steelers, and the Steelers are just a team you can't really trust. I know these are two teams who have won a lot of games this year, and they've been very effective this year, and that's fair enough. I think the kind of the matchup I really want to see is the Ravens and the Patriots in the playoffs, because you get Lamar Jackson, that young quarterback, going against Belichick, who's that great, brilliant mind. And Belichick, this weekend, kind of just made a fool out of Kirk Cousins, because normally, as a quarterback, when you read coverages, you start off by checking how many safeties are deep. So if one safety is deep, it's probably going to be cover one or cover three. Cover one is one deep safety, man coverage underneath. Cover three is one deep safety in the middle and zone all around it. And then if there's two back there, it's likely cover two, cover four, where you've got two deep safeties playing zone in the back, cutting the field in half, or you've got four defenders back cutting the field in quarters. What Belichick did against Kirk Cousins was have both of his safeties within 5 or 6 yards of the line of scrimmage and then drop them back deep very late in the play clock. So he was going from having no one back to having either one back or having two back. And he just did that with Cousins because he knew if he messed with Cousins, Cousins' default was to check the ball down. So that's how he wound up with 45 attempts for 200 yards or whatever it was, and why he was throwing the ball 10 yards short of the first down line and all those third downs. So if you have Bill Belichick going up against a rookie quarterback like Lamar Jackson, he's probably going to be able to handle him easily. But on the other side, it does not feel like this offense is playing well. They snuck past the Vikings, basically. Josh Gordon looks really good because he's Josh Gordon, but he hasn't really been heavily involved in the offense. Julian Edelman has been inconsistent since he's come back. And Brady himself has just not been great. He's been fine. He hasn't been awful. He's just not been typical Brady. So in that sense, what you're saying is right. In Brady's terms, I'm comparing Brady to years past. But team as a whole, I just don't really feel like it's an intimidating roster and intimidating performances they've played throughout the year. I think the AFC overall is stacked this year, and I think the NFC is stacked as well. I think both playoffs this year look really good. So that's part of it too. It's not that the Patriots are really bad and have dropped off really far. It's everyone else has gotten a little bit better as well.
Yeah, or in some cases a lot better. Like we talked a bit about the Chargers there and the Texans. Like, these are definitely teams that have made quantum leaps forward. In many cases, it's down to personnel, but it's also down to, like, it seems like certainly in Houston, there's still some injuries on the roster, but they've got a coaching ticket who understands exactly what they're trying to do, and they've got an identity as a team, both on offense and defense.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we talked about this last week, but Mike Vrabel's departure from there has very much helped the defense, and I mean, that's a weird thing to say because he became a head coach somewhere else, but they've just stopped making mistakes. They've stopped blowing their own coverages. J.J. Watt's been back this year, healthy. I was very skeptical about J.J. Watt because when you've got a bad back and a bad leg and you're old, you don't expect him to be explosive, but he's pretty much dominated. I'm like, it probably sounds a bit ridiculous considering how we came into this year, but I trust the Chargers a lot more than I trust the Texans, and that's simply because of the schedule. I think the Chargers have played better teams and they perform better against better teams, and I think that Chargers team, with Phillip Rivers there, with everything they've got around them, Derwin James is everything as advertised. As a rookie defensive back, you can't expect much more from his safety, and then you've got Casey Hayward there as well, with Joey Bosa coming back. That Chargers team, that's phenomenal. The Texans team, they have an identity, they know what they're doing, but I have a feeling that they're kind of beating worse teams. And once you get to the playoffs, if they go against the Chargers, if they go against the Chiefs, I think they might be kind of comfortably beaten.
Well, it definitely, like, I mean, I can see exactly why you'd make that case, but I can't wait to see those games because, you know, like, there is a little bit of magic in their quarterback, and they have enough around the field to be able to do something on most plays. The Derwin James, just to briefly talk about this, so. He is a rookie safety, and I think he was taken 17th in the draft by the Chargers. There's been this real movement away from valuing the safety position in the NFL. Good players can't get big contracts, or they're getting 1 year prove a contracts coming back from injuries. And I wonder if the impact that somebody like he is having as a rookie might make some teams rethink and go, actually, you know what? We need good safeties.
I think across the board, safeties are losing their value. Like, the Cowboys wouldn't give up a second-round pick for Earl Thomas, for example. You had guys like Eric Reid is a different situation. But a guy like Kenny Vaccaro, who was with the Saints, who didn't get a job until August, until someone got hurt. And that's a guy who was considered a Pro Bowl-level talent. Now, he may have fallen off a little bit, but he shouldn't have fallen off from the point of being a starter on a team to not being able to get a job anywhere at all. So the safety market has been deflated quite a bit. Derwin James shouldn't really apply there, though. Coming out of college at FSU, he was special, and you could see straight away that he was special. His level of athleticism, his ability to diagnose plays in front of him, his ability to close and go all carriers and play any spot in the field, you can line him up outside a cornerback. You can line him up in the box. You can line him up in the slot. You can line him up deep. Whatever you ask him to do, he will be able to do it. And that's usually valuable in the sense of you're getting that execution from that individual on the field, but it's also usually valuable in the sense of masking what you're doing against the opposing offense. So in the Steelers game this weekend, Derwin James would often line up over a cornerback or over a wide receiver outside as an outside cornerback, but he was actually covering the running back in the backfield. So he would make a very, very late shift, and this hurts Ben Roethlisberger trying to figure out where to go with the ball and try to confuse him a little bit. But overall, the safety market, I understand why it's deflated a little bit. Just I understand why all defensive players should be deflated a little bit right now, just the way the league is. But playing safety is pretty much impossible. You've got to be great against the run. You've got to be great against the pass. You're not allowed to hit anyone properly anymore. And you've got to be able to do all this stuff in perfect discipline within the construct of the defense while reacting to the offense. It's an impossible position to play. So I understand why people don't want to invest a huge amount of money in it. But if you still get a chance to get an Earl Thomas, get a Derwin James, you've got to go and do it.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Rams in Chicago, because obviously Chicago lost last weekend in a game that I'd say 3-4 weeks ago, when they had a fully fit quarterback, they were looking at going, well, that's a definite win. The Giants are a bit of a basket case. And then looked the previous week like they had almost decided they were going to tank when they refused to give Saquon Barkley the ball in the second half when they could have salted the game away. This week, they were giving Saquon the ball all the way through to overtime. So I don't know what the hell is going on there. It just seems like, you know, that might also be a coaching staff that needs to give itself a long, hard look in the mirror. But what about the Bears? Like, if Trubisky is in any way hampered, I haven't heard a confirmation that he's back yet, by the way, so I'm sure people listening to this, by the time they listen to it, will know one way or another. But let's assume he is back, because that was the original report. But if he is back, that's about them understanding fully that actually this guy is very important to them, right?
Well, like, I assume he's going to be back anyway, because the talk initially was that it was only going to be one game. And I think the fact that they won that Lions game and that Chase Daniel wasn't awful, they tried to win another one. They tried to sneak another one in because they were playing a bad team. This is kind of, by the way, if you're wondering why a team doesn't use Saquon Barkley from week to week, don't assume rational decision-making from NFL coaching staffs. It just doesn't happen. They're so inconsistent in what they do. But with Trubisky coming back, I think this is going to be a great game and it's going to be a great matchup. And I actually, like, I know everyone loved the Chiefs-Rams game and it was a phenomenal high-scoring, big plays over and over and over again. I'm not saying it's going to be as dramatic as that, but from a matchups point of view, this is a lot more interesting a game because you get to go against Jared Goff's offense with an actual defense that can actually respond to him and actually cover his receivers. Eddie Jackson working in the middle of the field, Khalil Mack up front. You've got Akeem Hicks there who's going to get that interior penetration and prevent them from giving him completely clean pockets off of hard play fakes. And that's going to contain that Rams offense. And on the other side, you don't really know what you're getting from Mitch Trubisky, and you also kind of don't know what you're getting from the Rams defense, because they've been inconsistent year or from week to week. They rely on Aaron Donald to get big plays. They don't know what version of Marcus Peters are getting every week. I believe Aqib Talib is back. I'm not sure how effective he's going to be, but yeah, Trubisky has to be there for them to really compete with a team like the Rams. So if he's not in this game, we can probably just forget about it. If he is in this game, it's going to be a fascinating matchup.
Is there a possibility that Aqib Talib again is one of those kind of force multipliers where he comes into the team and suddenly they can put him on the best wide receiver on the opposition, which suddenly transforms Marcus Peters and he's playing against slightly lesser grade opposition, and suddenly everybody in that defense starts to look a lot better?
I wouldn't say normally, but this week, yeah, because this week he's going to go against Allen Robinson, and Allen Robinson is pretty much what you expect Aqib Talib to work against. Aqib Talib, a long, aggressive, athletic cornerback, a guy who gets in your face, presses you at the line, fights you for the ball at the catch point. Allen Robinson, a long, aggressive, athletic wide receiver who wants to win the ball at the catch point. If you could just put a camera on those two and follow them all game, you probably only see five or six balls all day, but you would see two guys just fighting each other. Not the way you expect a wide receiver and cornerback to play. You expect like defensive end and an offensive tackle to play that way. But if you just followed those all game, great, it'll be a great matchup. Yeah, Peters will be able to kind of free roam a little bit more because he won't be on the primary threat. That's a very important thing against Trubisky, because Trubisky, for as much as he's improved his numbers this year, he has grown a tendency to throw the ball to defensive backs and give defensive back opportunities to break on the ball. A lot of the time he's got very lucky on that and they've dropped them, and a couple of times it's actually led to a ball being dropped for an interception, then immediately the offense going for a touchdown, which are two massive swing plays. The one thing with Marcus Peters is you might beat him in coverage over again. He might miss tackles over again. When you give him opportunities to catch the ball, he generally catches it, which isn't something you can say about most defensive backs in this league.
Let's move on. You talked about you want to see the Ravens against the Patriots in the playoffs. They've got the Kansas City Chiefs this weekend. It'd be good to see a properly, fully functioning defense to see what they can actually do against Kansas City. Because, I don't know, maybe Kansas City come off, maybe they miss a little bit of a beat after everything that has happened to them over the last 2 weeks. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're just as good as they always were. But like, I would like to see some of these really strong defenses playing well and see what the score is at that point.
Spencer Ware and Charkandjic West, who they've just re-signed, are a perfectly good running back combination. Spencer Ware was the starter in Kansas City until Kareem Hunt came in and took his job after Spencer Ware got hurt. The only reason he lost his job was because he got hurt. He probably would have lost it eventually because Kareem Hunt is a better player. But these guys, they're not going to have the same impact that Hunt had. Hunt is able to break tackles more easily. He's a more explosive back. He's a better runner overall. He's very versatile. As a receiver, he's a massive threat out of the backfield. When Mahomes checked down to him, even if he didn't check down at the perfect time, he'd be able to make linebackers miss in space or run over defensive backs. But the other key here is kind of getting overlooked. Sammy Watkins has not been healthy the last couple of weeks. Losing Sammy Watkins on your own is one thing. Losing Sammy Watkins and Kareem Hunt is another, because now it's easier to focus on Tyreek Hill, which is what the Raiders basically did last weekend. They were able to close Tyreek Hill off. Travis Kelce obviously still beat them. They didn't put up huge numbers, and Mahomes' job becomes comes tougher. Because Mahomes isn't in a situation like Drew Brees, where he's got a great offensive line in front of him. He's got a good offensive line. He doesn't have a great one, and he doesn't have a great running game to just turn around and rely on now. So it's a very, very different situation for this Chiefs offense, and going against the Ravens defense, to me, There are probably three defenses in this league right now that can shut down an opposing offense and win a game on its own on occasion, and it would be the Ravens, the Bears, and the Jaguars sometimes. The Jaguars obviously have been inconsistent. They just did it this weekend against Andrew Luck Colts, though, so you're going to have to give them some credit there. Outside of those three defenses, I don't think there's any defense in the league that really intimidates you. So having this Ravens defense go against this Chiefs offense is going to be a great, great matchup. And honestly, this weekend, we have some really, really good games, and we had last weekend as well. So we're kind of getting a little bit spoiled right now.
Yeah. Is there no chance that 8-8 makes the playoffs for the Jags if they go on a roll at this point, kind of having got rid of their quarterback disaster? It's like actually, you know, at least with Cody Kessler, we know we're hiding him. We're not pretending anything else.
I mean, if they can win game 6-0, sure. But Cody Kessler was pretty damn bad in that game too.
Yeah, so you're saying no. I'm hearing no.
Yeah, I've got to go with no.
Who else is actually making moves at this point? You're like, okay, I see there's something emerging here over the course of the season.
Well, it's got to be the Cowboys. Like, if you've obviously, we've talked about Amari Cooper all the time, and they're going against the Eagles this weekend, which should be a relatively easy matchup for them because the Eagles are missing 20 different cornerbacks, and they weren't really exposed last week because Colt McCoy and Mark Sanchez can't throw the ball. But Josh Doctson, when he got opportunities, was open, and Amari Cooper should be open all game. But that's not really the reason I'm excited about them. I'm excited about them because defensively, you've got talent at every level. DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory coming off the edges have been outstanding. Leighton Van Der Esch has obviously become the star as a rookie, which has been way better than I expected him to be. And then the secondary, Byron Jones has been one of the better cornerbacks in the league, while the safeties have played well too. It's kind of coming together as a full unit, and Chris Richard, who is an ex-Seattle Seahawks coach, is getting a lot of credit for how that defense is playing, and he's kind of moving to the top of this head coach search list right now.
Yeah. The other thing that they're able to do is they're able to control the pace of the game, which they did against the Saints last week. So is that the template for all of these teams, or are they only able to use the template because their defense is so good?
That's always what they've wanted to do, because they want to run the ball with Zeke, and it hasn't worked in prior games. But the one thing I should note is that Tyron Smith wasn't playing the last game. Connor Williams is just coming back as well. So they're actually going to probably get a little bit better on offense too. I don't think that's a template for most teams. Like, it works for the Bears, but they don't really try and do that because they have that Matt Nagy open offense where they're trying to throw the ball everywhere and get big plays. Cowboys can do it. The Jaguars tried to do it. The Jaguars failed to do it because the quarterback is so bad, and they also invested in bad options out wide and bad options on the offensive line. I don't necessarily think it's kind of a one way to win a game or one way to play, one style, one way to control the clock, one to try and score as many points as possible. It's all about playing to what kind of talent you have available. The Rams can probably win a game whatever way they want, but they try and win games by scoring as much as possible because they have the weapons on offense. If you wanted to go to a ball control offense with Todd Gurley, that would work, but you'd probably need Todd Gurley to turn down big runs the way he turns down touchdowns sometimes.
Yeah, and that's unlikely to happen. The teams who are charging at this stage to make the wildcard spots in various places, Denver have gone 6-6. The Seahawks, I think, are kind of, I mean, if they continue to perform at the level they're performing at, they're nailed on, and they're going to be unbelievably difficult for anybody to beat. Are Denver just a bit too flaky at this point for anybody to believe in?
I think so, yeah. Once he traded Demaryius Thomas, it allowed Cameron Sutton to come into the offense a little bit more. And I really like Cameron Sutton, or Cortland Sutton. I keep calling him Cameron because Cortland is just such a different name. You don't hear it very often. But Cortland Sutton has become this really this ball winner. And then you've got Philip Lindsay. So they're getting a lot from their rookie class. Those are young guys, and the problem is you just don't really trust Case Keenum. If you put the Broncos on one side and put the Seahawks on the other, I would say the Broncos are the better overall team. But over the last month or so, Russell Wilson has played really, really well. And like, that's been an issue for him, sustaining that consistency over recent years. This, over the start of the year, you remember a couple of primetime games he had where he was really bad, especially that Bears game where he made mistake after mistake after mistake. But since then, his footwork in particular has gone from completely unreliable to outstanding. In this 49ers game, he only threw the ball 17 or 18 times, but his footwork on all those plays was hugely impressive, except for one at the goal line when he took a sack that he shouldn't have taken. So when you get Russell Wilson playing that way, he's got the accuracy, he's got the athleticism, he's got the elusiveness in the pocket and outside of the pocket that you can kind of beat anyone, because he's going to be able to put up big numbers, but they're also going to control the game like you were just talking about with the Cowboys and with the Rams, well, comparing them to the Rams. But they're able to control games because Chris Carson there has run really well. Rashard Penny's looked pretty good. They've got I think JD McKissick is coming back. So the offensive line, the only concern is I think they just lost DJ Fluker at right guard, who was a pretty important piece for them.
Okay, they've got the best rushing attack, I think, in the game at the moment. So, Cian, great stuff as always. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks a million.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Cian Fahey there giving us his thoughts. You can subscribe to his Patreon for more detailed analysis as well. Sue is here to, apologise for last week's shoddy performance.
That's not fair.
That's how it works.
Listen, last week was all over the place. Like, I was pushed hard to find three picks.
Do I get
anyway.
My money back? Is that what happens? Is that how it works?
Did you actually bet on the ones that I don't
Of course I bet on all of them.
You never bet on the... No, don't lie. You
only
didn't
on your losers. Only on the ones that you... your losers.
Well, that's what happened then. You jinxed it.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone else has been fine until you came along.
I'm looking for the spreads here. So
that's yeah, well, actually, a couple of them have moved since this morning. I am over and back about the Texans as well. Colts are playing the Texans this week. Texans are -4.5 at home. 9-3 is a pretty good record. The Colts were pretty bad.
These are hard
week.
Games. Why? So this is a like.
Yeah, no, this is my. I'm not sure, but these are the ones I'm going to go for, okay? I'm going to go for the Seahawks at home, -3 to the Vikings.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm going to go for the Cowboys at home to the Eagles at -3.5.
Ooh, divisional game.
It is a divisional game, but I really feel like the Cowboys have something about them the last few weeks and have managed to drag themselves back into this.
Keen just said that the Eagles have no cornerback, and so Amari Cooper should be wide open all day. So
I don't even think that spread is that big. I thought it would have been bigger.
I don't know. The Eagles just killed the Redskins on Monday Night Football.
It's the Redskins, though.
It is, and they have no quarterback.
They have no quarterback.
But this is a championship-winning team in the final throws, and if they win this, they get the tiebreak against the Cowboys and they're going to win the division more than likely. This is it's not quite winner takes all, but it's pretty close to it.
Yeah. I have a feeling about the Cowboys. I really do.
All right.
Over the last
Cowboys
few games.
-3.5. Like,
I'm going to, like, I'll quickly go through the other games in a minute that I'm not going to touch. And the Broncos at the 49ers.
Yes.
-5.5.
The 49ers
are on the road, but the 49ers are all over the place. But literally, like, I went through each of these games and was like, no, like, Jags and Titans wouldn't touch it. Falcons at the Packers. Packers have a new coach. Chiefs, not too sure of them after the Hunt thing.
So I think the Packers are going to win. I have a feeling that...
That spread is -6, so...
Yeah, but the Falcons are also phoning it in.
But do you not think that you've no idea what's going to happen there?
No, I think the Falcons are going to wet the bed. Like they have been doing week after week after week after week after week recently.
But the Packers have the same record as like what?
They do. They both have 4 wins this season, I think. Is that?
Yeah. And
4 and... So the Atlanta are 4-8 and the Green Bay Packers are 4-7-1. They had that tie earlier in the season. But
Panthers, so disappointing this season. So disappointing. It just went all badly last week. Steelers as well, I've left them out because
Panthers
they were
are minus
really
two
well.
At the Browns. Mm. I'm not taking the Panthers with points given away. No, thanks.
No.
What's next?
No, wouldn't touch it. The Colts at the Texans, which you just talked about. The Patriots at the Dolphins. I wouldn't touch the Patriots in this game because they're weird in Miami.
They are. They're only weird in Miami when it's hot.
Yeah, but they're weird enough in Miami for me to not know what's going to happen in that game because the Dolphins
one day that was like 200 degrees and they all sweated and they got hammered.
Yeah.
That's all I remember. I think everybody gets spooked by that.
And I'm not going to be able to quote the exact record, but Brady's a really bad record in Miami. So they just seem to be this freak team. The Saints are at the Bucs. They lost the Bucs start of the season and the spread is -8 for the Saints to be there.
Again, a divisional game. I think that I can see it is. Yeah, I agree with you. That's stay away.
Giants at the Redskins. This is the other one that I would have actually gone for. Is Giants are -3 on the road to the Redskins.
They've gone to -3.5.
Yeah, I think so. I think if they're going to win that, they're going to win it by a touchdown, won't be by a field goal.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you're trusting the shitty Giants against the even
yeah,
worse
and
Redskins.
Manning is and just painful.
Mark Sanchez playing.
Painful to watch. Jets and Bills is just, I literally wrote down mad. Because I just can't figure that one out. +3.5 on the road, the Jets are. Bengals at the Chargers. The spread for that is -14.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
I think that spread is too big, but I don't think I'm not sure about the Bengals, and I'm too scared to bet on Derek Carr for the Raiders. So the Steelers are at the Raiders at -11 on the road.
Yeah, I think that
Roethlisberger is weird. He has this thing where he gets in his own head, and like I don't remember some of his interviews from last year after the games where he went drastically wrong, and he was like, oh, "Maybe my career's finished.
Yeah,
maybe this
yeah,
the end."
He just gets really. He got his juju back pretty quickly though.
Rams at the Bears. The Rams are -3.
That's a good bet, I think.
For the Rams?
Yeah, I think that's a good
Did
bet.
You take it?
I think yeah.
I think that
the Rams are a significant step up from the Bears at the moment, so I would be picking.
Trubisky's back in though, isn't he?
I do like the Seahawks. -3. I'll be picking the
Bears.
Rams
have a great defense.
-3 away from home, and I will be picking the San Francisco 49ers, the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I think the Bears might win that. I think they have a really good defense.
Is that you picking that?
No.
My tribal comes out at about 4-1.
Yeah. It's in around that.
Back them all individually. It's just a little small, a euro each.
These weeks are just really weird. Like, you just sit down and you're like, where did this game go?
Yeah, that's why. And that's like, why we play
Colts
fantasy.
The Colts was so depressing last week. And give I us, had luck as my fantasy quarterback.
Give us your picks.
Picks: Seahawks at home -3, Cowboys at home -3.5 to the Eagles, and then the Broncos on the road -5.5.
Yeah, two out of those three I'm fully on board with. So that's all we got time for today. If you want to get in touch with us, you can drop us a tweet, either at Off the Ball or at Off the Ball AM. We get both of those, and we will see you next week. If you have any questions you want answered or any specific things, topics that you want us to cover, feel free to get in touch as well, and we'll see you next week. Good luck. Thanks, Steve.